Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturer of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com. Welcome to Knife Talk. Now, today I'm having a chat with Sandy from Young Knives. So, hey, Sandy, how are you?
Hi there, Craig. How are you doing?
I'm very good, very good. So, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us that elevator pitch.
Basically, I started making knives probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and started off just basically, I was needing a new knife, and I was looking on YouTube like most of us probably did, and came across a Trollsky video, and basically I thought, yep, let's have a go at this, because I've made stuff before, I like making things. And basically, I took an old saw blade that I had, a reciprocating saw, a rip saw, and proceeded to make a terrible knife.
it's amazing the amount of people who I speak to say they started after seeing a Trollsky video. It's amazing.
Yeah. He just seems to be the guy that everybody started off with.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've all got a lot to thank him for, to be honest.
Definitely, definitely. I keep trying to get him on the show, but he's just always too busy. But maybe one day, maybe one day.
Too busy making YouTube videos for us guys.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So describe your style of knife. Do you have a sort of standard style, or do you do a bunch of different types? What's your thing?
Basically, I started off with the bushcraft knives. It just seemed to be an easy progression. I was into the outdoor sort of thing, and I started off really making them. It all kind of started with an Irish guy, small Irish guy, who was covered in tattoos, called Clinton, who commissioned me to make the first one for him, and another guy called Lee White. So I made these two knives, put them out, and the guys absolutely loved them. So that gave me the kind of drive to keep going. I ended up making a few more of them. And again, it was Clinton's wife who came to me for a last-minute Christmas present, and then she asked me to make him a straight razor.
Hmm.
So I'm one of these guys that I can't say no to people. Probably to my own detriment. But made the straight razors, they started going well. And then naturally I love cooking and decided to try and have a go at the chef's knives. And it seems to be the chef's knives that I've kind of got my name for now.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, looking at your knives on Instagram and on your website, I mean, they're beautiful knives, really beautiful. So,
yeah.
So who is your typical customer? Would it now be mainly chefs, or is it just, you know, a big broad section of people? What's the typical for you?
It's really a bit of both. I've had a lot of amateur cooks coming towards me, people looking for Christmas and birthday presents. And then more recently I've started doing more for the high-end chefs. So I've got knives with Tom Kerridge, I've got knives with Andrew Pern, and just recently it was on Instagram, the carving set for a guy called Tom Brown.
Right, right. Very nice.
So these guys are all kind of jumping on the bandwagon and they're using the knives every day in the kitchens, and it's fantastic to see them.
It is. I love seeing that, seeing a customer using the knife and then they post pictures and so on. Yeah, it always feels good.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Kerridge, I've been a big fan of Tom Kerridge's work for a long time now.
Yeah.
And it was basically, I went on his Instagram page, dropped him a little message asking if he'd like me to make him a knife. Came back, said, yeah, love a Santuco, so I designed a Santuco for him. Went down to the restaurant, and it was amazing to see his reaction to the knives.
Fantastic.
And the other good thing is, you get fed for nothing in these.
They're so grateful. They're going to feed you too. Yeah, that's great.
It's absolutely amazing. I mean, the guys treat me like a king when I go up there. It's unbelievable.
So that's great that you've got people of note using your knives, because obviously that promotes your knives for you.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I'm trying to sort of focus just on knives for the kitchen now. I found it hard in the past to sort of market myself, So my thinking is, if I just work to a set demographic, which would be chefs and home cooks, it's hopefully easier to market rather than spread myself thinly trying to market to everybody, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean there. I mean, I think I'm going to try and tend to stick to the chefs now so I can concentrate on actually developing the range.
Yes, making
Because you kind of jump about from doing this to that to this to that. It takes time up.
Yes, certainly does, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, the main reason for me is just trying to sort of market solely to that one demographic, you know. So I'm, you know, in the new year, I've got some sort of recipe videos going up on the site and all these little kinds of things, you know. But it's difficult, yeah, isn't it, to get in front of the right people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to actually seeing what recipes you come out with.
Well, I love food. I live for food. So, yeah, there's plenty of recipes. It's just trying to get them down onto... I was going to say tape then. That makes me sound really old, doesn't it? Not quite tape, okay. But...
I'm old enough to understand what tape is.
Onto SD card.
Yeah.
So do you do any knife shows or exhibitions, that kind of stuff?
Well, basically, with the Tom Kerridge thing, he started doing what's called Pub in the Park.
Yes. So
the kind of idea of that is they bring together... so many Michelin-starred chefs into the one place. So it's like a big food festival. They have pop-up restaurants, they have music. It's all down in Marlow. It's fantastic. And when I went down to meet Tom, he asked me to come down and set me up on a stall down there.
Oh, great.
So it was absolutely fantastic, but unfortunately, about 2 months before it, chopped my thumb off whilst making the knives for him.
Wow.
And it really, really, really put me back.
Yeah.
So I went down with a range that I'm trying to develop with him at the moment, just to see what the public reaction would be.
Yes, yeah.
And it was absolutely fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. So basically this year I'm going back down again, hopefully with thumbs intact and a box full of knives. And, yeah, I'm actually looking at maybe trying to do another few to see how they go.
Yes, yeah. It's something I've been thinking about doing. But, yeah, I haven't quite dipped my toe into that yet. So
it's fantastic. You really should go, because just to see people's reactions to your knives is unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, getting feedback, and particularly if there's chefs there too, giving you good feedback about your knives, you know, whether, you know, when I say good feedback, I don't mean good as in your knives are great, but, you know, feedback as in how you could improve, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to put it this way, Andrew Pern, he had a pop-up down there. He has a star inn up in Yorkshire, and he came down literally for 10 minutes, end of the night, and he says, can I have a go? He says, yeah, no problem. So he cut one tomato and says, can I buy them? And I was like, they're my knives. And I was like, yeah, but is it okay if I buy them? I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll make some more.
Fair enough.
So kind of start there.
With regards to sales, so are you doing a lot of sort of online orders, or are they just from people that you know, and, you know, word of mouth gets around? How are you normally getting your orders in?
Mostly through Instagram, like pretty much the everybody, really. The Instagram thing's absolutely fantastic. I mean, Twitter's great. I get stuff through the website, and yeah, I do get some word of mouth. It's just when you start talking to people and you tell them you're a knife maker, you usually get that strange reaction of, what?
Exactly, yeah.
And then you show them, and they instantly become interested in what you're doing. And that kind of then leads on to, oh, could you make a knife for me? And sometimes people are shocked at the prices. But again, once you start explaining to them the whole process and that they are handmade, we're in our workshops, working away for hours on them.
Yeah.
So they start to appreciate what they actually are.
Yeah, yeah. And my belief there is if they sort of snark at the price, I think maybe, you know, it's just not for them, you know? There's plenty of people who are looking for quality, and, you know, go and speak to them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they are a kind of niche market, and a lot of people do get that way about price, but if they want them, they'll take them.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, it's really good to be speaking to a fellow Brit. So for those Americans who are listening, Sandy is Scottish. That's not a speech impediment. Yep. That's the way he speaks.
Yeah, Craig won't provide subtitles.
but as a Brit, you must have heard about this law that which may be coming into play, which is going to ban the delivery of knives through the post.
Yeah.
How are you going to deal with that?
That's the question on everybody's lips at the moment. It's really difficult because, I mean, you can understand that people want to make people safe. And by all means, I mean, we and I'm saying we as in knife makers, we vet our clients. We check, we get age verification off them, we get credit card details and passports. I keep a log of everybody's passport, their address, and where the knives went.
Yeah.
Just simply because if for any instance anything did happen, God forbid it, you've got a record there. And it's being responsible, I think, is the main thing. Like so of Amazon and the other bigger names that are selling knives, they need to take more responsibility on what they are actually selling.
Yeah, and I think that's what this law is you know, trying to protect. It's not the likes of us, because our customers generally aren't under 18, and you know they're generally professionals. But it's just this blanket sort of ban. Whereas you know a $5 knife on Amazon being sold to a 14-year-old, you know what we do is very, very different. And I think it's going to impact a lot of people.
Yeah, I think there also needs to be education on the issue as well.
Hmm.
Because I mean, you were probably the very same, Craig. When you were a kid, you had a pen knife.
Yeah.
And everybody had a penknife when they were a kid, and the only person I ever cut was myself, unfortunately. But I've just always had one. Yeah. During my day job, I look after construction sites, and I always have a Leatherman on me.
Hmm.
So it's one of these things. If you're going to use it for what the purpose it's used for, yeah, that's fantastic, but as you say, the sale of these zombie knives and other such brands, as they call them, they are what's causing the problem.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, hopefully something will be sorted and, you know, it's not going to impact people too much. But, yeah, it is just a little bit of a worry at the moment.
Hopefully the British government will see sense.
Yes, yeah. So back to your knives.
Yeah.
Just looking today at some of those pictures, and I mean your file work on those spines, it's just really beautiful.
Yeah, it's something I actually really like doing. It's quite relaxing.
Yeah, I've tried it, and mine were absolutely terrible. So, if you've got any tips for somebody just starting out looking to do some file work?
Basically, just take your time and practice on a couple of. Just take a couple of scraps. We all have scrap pieces of metal lying about the workshop. I mean, basically, what I'll do is I'll flatten off the spine and I'll use a chalk pen or a paint pen, just so I've got something that I can mark up. And then I'll mark my increments, and I usually start off with a round file, small round needle file, put the initial cuts in, and then I just kind of work it away from there. Mm. It actually gets to the point, the more you do it, you don't even need to mark it out.
Yeah,
I think it's just one of the things you've got to practice. It's like doing grinds. We all started off with jigs, and then you'll start going up on doing freehand grinds. And the first ones will be terrible, but after a few, you just end up getting into a rhythm.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know where to be. It's probably a bit hard to explain, really.
Yeah, and I do things a little bit in the reverse, actually. So I started off without using a jig. And just a few months ago, I started using a jig, thinking, let's have a look. You know, is this going to be quicker? Is this going to help me out? And the first week or so, I think, this is great. But, you soon start to realise the restrictions of it, and I'm sort of back to freehand, you know?
Yeah. Was that one of the Dan's jigs?
It is, yeah. And it's fantastic. Yeah. It's built so well.
I sat down up at the workshop. He's been up here.
Oh, right. Oh, great. Great. So I still use it if I've got, you know, large sort of flat segments to do on, you know, on larger knives. you know, just to hold a flat. It's quite handy for that. But yeah, it is a really good piece of kit. So that is it, Basher Dan, isn't it, on Instagram?
That's the one. Yeah. He actually made a hand sanding jig for me after a cup of fun.
Oh right, yeah.
That's where that kind of came from.
Yes, yeah.
And it's that his stuff. He puts it together so well.
Yeah.
It's really well put together. It takes a lot of time, and he's got an eye for detail when it comes to these things.
Yes, as I say, it's just really well made. Really nice piece of kit.
Yeah, and he's a lovely big lad as well.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors, Tormek. To get great razor-sharp and repeatable edges, you're going to need a Tormek. To find out more, go to tormek.com, which is T-O-R-M-E-K.com. Okay, let's get back to the show. So let's talk about your process a bit. Let's start with your steel choice. Do you have a standard steel that you always go to, or do you try and mix it up?
Yeah, I'm basically using 1095 at the moment.
Yeah.
Which I'm getting in flat plate from High Grade Steel.
Yeah.
It's fantastic stuff to use.
Yeah,
it can be a temperamental in the heat treat.
Yeah. Well, I'm generally using sort of 01 or 1095. I've just started using X75, which they're selling over here in France, which I think is very, very similar in composition. But also just a little bit of stainless as well. So a bit of Niolux I've been using this week, which is really nice.
How are you finding the stainless?
Really nice, actually. So Niolux is oil quenching. So it obviously requires a higher temperature. So, you know, use the horse foil wrap, that kind of thing. Take it up to about 1050°C. Quenching oil. Very, very hard to get any scratches off after heat treat. And it will just rip through belts, you know. But yeah, if you've got a nice sort of finish before heat treat, it's then just a case of, you know, tidying up and a bit of polishing. And it's, yeah, really, really nice. So I think I'll be doing a bit more of that. I haven't really done any sort of hard testing on it yet as such with regards to how long, you know, the edge is going to last, that kind of thing. I've only just really started this week. But it's really nice to work with. Really nice.
Yeah, it's something I have looked at. But again, trying to treat it in a gas forge.
Oh, right, yes. That can be difficult, yeah.
It's a bit tricky at the moment.
Yeah.
So, but the 1095, I mean, it gets a really, really good edge on it.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's very similar to 01, isn't it?
Yeah, but you've got the added benefit. You can add Hamones.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, I do like it for that, but you really need to get it. The heat treat nailed, because if you don't, and I've found out various occasions that it will crack on you when you least expect it. It's one of these ones you think it's went well, you set it down, and then you'll just hear ding. Your heart breaks.
So how are you testing your blades? Do you have any way of testing hardness?
I'm at the moment using the Rockwell files.
Right, yeah.
So I'm using that at the moment. I am trying to locate a Rockwell tester.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are very, very expensive.
They are. I'm looking to order one very soon. And, you know, looking at the used ones on eBay, they seem to go within, you know, very, very quickly. And at very good prices too.
Yeah, you need to be quick on these things.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Okay, so what kind of grind are you using? Are you using the sort of standard 2x72 that everybody's using?
Yeah, 2x72. I got that from Alistair at Denland Engineering.
Oh, right, yes, yeah.
Got it made for me. It's absolutely fantastic. Great machine. I've got the variable speed control on it.
Very nice, very nice.
So it made a massive difference. I mean, prior to that, I was using a 30-pound... shop bought grinder with the polishing wheel on the side.
Oh, the little 1x30s.
I
started on one of them, and I've got to say, some of the work I've seen people do on them is incredible. But yeah, it's just so much easier on a bigger grinder.
Yeah, I mean, mine's was cobbled together. I had timber tool rests on it. Yeah. I stuck the top section off it. Oh, jeez. But yeah, I mean, I must have made at least 30 knives off that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it certainly paid for itself.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, the same as mine. It was it was used and abused and battered. And only last week I gave it to one of the local kids around here who's just started making knives. So I gave it to him. So I'm interested to see what he does with it now and whether it lasts.
They are good. I mean, I've still got them. I use it for polishing now.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I still have the polishing wheel on there, and I just use it for doing that now.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, right. We talked about your steel, about your grinder, your belts. What kind of belts are you using?
I'm using the ones from Ground Flat Stock.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes. From David.
David. He started selling the green belts. They're really good, to be fair.
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
And they're a decent price as well.
Yeah, I've yet to use them, so I'm still using a batch that I've got from Combat Abrasives in the US, which are great. But now being in France, it's, yeah, getting them imported, you know. And, you know, their costs are great. So if in the US, I fully suggest using them because they're great, but unfortunately shipping charges just, yeah, they prevent me from using them, but that's, yeah. It's a long story.
I've had a look at them, and some of the import costs is, oh man.
Yeah.
It just, your heart sinks as soon as you see that.
Yeah, I think unless you're ordering sort of £500-600 at a time, it doesn't really make sort of commercial sense, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should all chip in together, do a massive group deal.
Get a container over of them, a container over of even heat ovens, and everyone'd be happy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Even heat ovens, yes. I tried to buy one recently, and the guys had put up a slightly damaged one. It was silent.
They've done a few of these, haven't they? Yes, great idea, I think. Yeah.
And, I mean, the guys are fantastic, and they came back with so much information so quickly. And I put a bid in, but the shipping was horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, I went through that. So, I mean, the shipping was basically the cost of the oven. Mine was stuck in customs as well for over 4 weeks, just in customs. And then you get, the customs bill then, which was another sort of £600-700 on top of that. And it was just, wow. But I couldn't live without it now. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it might be cheaper to fly over, pick one up and use it as hand luggage.
They're pretty heavy, but hey.
Yeah, but I think I'd lift it in that case.
So how are you finishing your blades? How are you polishing?
The dreaded hand sand.
Right, yes. It's a bit of a pain, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably my least favourite part.
Yeah.
But it needs to be done if you want to kind of raise the game on them.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been watching a load of Nick Wheeler videos. And Nick's fantastic. The way he does his hand sanding, I've now started doing it that way.
Yeah.
And it's much quicker.
Yeah, yeah. Same with me. Hand sanding I really hate. So depending on the sort of the type of blade, I'm doing quite a few with just using surface conditioning belts. Those sort of Scotch-Brite belts, you know? And I've got five different grades, so if you work your way down. And you can get a really, really nice satin finish. But quite often, just before I get to the last belt, I'll spend a good hour, doing a bit of hand sanding first. It makes a hell of a difference. But, it's just one of those necessary evils, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just looking at my I'm in the workshop at the moment, and I keep looking over because I've got one to do tonight.
Putting it off till Sunday night, like homework when you were a kid. Putting it off till last thing Sunday night.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's when you've got a big batch and you just go, oh man, I've got 10 of these to do.
Yeah, 4 or 5 days of just sitting there and getting cramp and yeah.
Yeah.
So what about etching? Are you pressing or are you electro-etching? How are you getting your logos?
I'm electro-etching at the moment. Funnily enough, using your advice, and I've went and bought myself a Brother printer.
Oh, one of those little printers.
Yeah.
How are you finding that?
It's fantastic. It's really good, actually. Really good. You need to play about with it a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
And, and just get it right. But once it's right, I think it gives a fantastic finish on it.
It does. And I tape down the stencil tape. I tape it down nice and flat so, it's not going to move. It just works really well. And I've actually spoken to Brother since then as well because, I'd say over a dozen people have actually ordered them, sort of knife makers since then, which is amazing. So I contacted them just to say, do you realise it's being used in, for knife making and so on, which they didn't know. But they have said that they are introducing a new model, which is going to have a much higher resolution.
Fantastic.
So at the moment, that's the one thing with this little printer is the resolution isn't as good as the as my normal sort of stencils that I was using, which I think they were screen printed. So the resolution isn't quite as high. It takes a good eye to see the difference. But the newer printer is going to have a 1200 DPI resolution, which will just be incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, that'll be a lot. I might actually get away with using my full logo.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because at the moment, I'm just doing the YK, basically.
Right, yeah.
Because there's quite a lot of detail in my logo.
Yeah.
And I've had them done by laser, and they come out great.
Mm.
But again, the guy from me is about an hour's drive, and then there's maybe a couple of hours down there and another hour back, so...
Is there a lot of time out, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a couple of occasions where they've not just quite worked out. And when it gets to that point, you've done all the work on the blade and it just... there's been a couple of occasions, but it's... Part and parcel, isn't it?
It is, unfortunately, yeah. So I'm currently using my screen-printed labels for my logo. But I'm only using the Brother stuff because obviously you're going to use that stencil once anyway. Because, they mess up. But I'm using them for, like, serial numbers on knives and for inscriptions that people want, more of the sort of, the stuff that will change all the time,
Yeah.
So it's nice to have that sort of flexibility to be able to do that. People want their names on knives, that kind of thing,
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, a lot of the chefs, they want them on the knives simply because other chefs will steal their knives.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
They're a terrible bunch, chefs, really.
So what are you doing about packaging? It's been a real problem of mine. Not a problem, but it's just something that I've been really trying to crack over the last couple of months, actually. Trying to get really good packaging at a decent price. If you're in the States, there's plenty of custom sort of box making apps that you can use that'll, you can make even a cardboard box to your specific sizes. But here in the UK, it's difficult. What are you doing?
I'm in the same boat as you, Craig, to be honest. I've tried various ways of packaging them. I've tried wooden boxes, but again, it's trying to get the cost down on them, really, because the guys are taking a lot of time and effort to make the boxes, and you can appreciate that they're looking for a bit of money out of them as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've looked at cardboard box packaging, but when you actually go to order it, they're wanting at least 500 orders.
Yeah.
Which then you're sitting with 500 boxes, which is a bit of a pain. But yeah, I mean, at the moment I'm doing Hessian wraps on them.
That's pretty much the same as me. So a Hessian wrap, then using a cardboard tube.
Yeah, pretty much at the moment. Hopefully I can get something a lot better. I'm in the process of talking to another maker, a guy called William Firth. Does a lot of woodworking stuff. And he's looking at making up some boxes for me to see if we can maybe do like a thing together.
Yeah.
He helps me help him sort of idea.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I've toyed the idea with using sort of just balsa wood and then getting, one of those cheap lasers and putting a logo on the balsa wood and making the box that way. But it's just so time consuming, And because I generally don't have a range of knives. Each knife I make is different dimension to the last and so on. It's... it's difficult to get to do that each time.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at doing the foam packaging, for the knife to sit in.
Yes, yeah.
But again, it's a bit like you say, there could be slight differences in the sizes and stuff like that. And if you've got it cut out nice and neat and you sit a knife in, which may have a slightly different dimension, it'll just look a bit rough around the edges, really, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. I recently ordered some knives from Florentine Kitchen Knives.
They're lovely knives. They're handles are amazing.
Beautiful, but they come packaged so well, and it's sort of vacuum formed, the inner tray, you know, velvet lined, really beautiful. But yeah, you just need to have each knife needs to be exactly the same. I'm sure I'll crack it. I'm sure I'll come up with a good solution. But as of yet, it's got me scratching my head.
Yeah, definitely. I'm the same. So if you come up with a solution, please let me know.
I will do. And if anybody's listening who's got a solution, let us know.
Yes, please.
Please do. Well, I'm going to finish soon. I'm going to finish with the same question that I ask everybody else. And that is, who are your heroes? Who do you admire? Whose work do you look at and think, one day I'll be as good as that?
Oh, wow, there's lots, isn't there? there really is lots. I mean, one of the main ones for me was Adam from Belchart.
Right, yes, yeah.
You had Jackie on a few weeks ago. Adam's stuff is just phenomenal.
It is, really is good, yes.
We chat so much all the time, me and Adam, throw ideas here, there and everywhere, and we're actually maybe looking at doing a collaboration piece.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So that is a massive thing for me. Sean Hatcher is incredible. It baffles me how he gets his handles so clean. The guy is an absolute wizard when it comes to putting handles on knives.
Yeah, his videos are great too, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, he's again, just one of the guys that just seems to be able to make it perfect every time. And that's what we all kind of strive to do. Other guys, I mean, Sandy from Jacklaw, he's been a big inspiration as well when I was doing the bushcraft knives.
Yes, yeah. And again, I've been trying to get Sandy on.
Get Sandy on. He's a lovely fella.
He is. And I love his videos because they're just, I don't know, they're just so personal too. And you can see how geeky he gets about, you know, his heat treat and all these kind of things.
He's got these things nailed down. I mean, The level of detail he goes into is fantastic.
Yeah. Hopefully one day we'll get him on the show.
Yeah, Sandy, please go on Craig's show, please. Everybody wants to talk to you.
Exactly. So I'm going to call this a day, because I know it's a Sunday night and you've got a lot of hand sanding to do. So where can people find you online?
People can find me on Instagram, so it's youngknives, _ at the very end. Yep. They can find me on Twitter, which is Sandy1982. And they can find me on the website, which is young-knives.co.uk.
Fantastic.